it's nice to have former law clerks out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
She clerked for Marina. He clerked for Marina.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, they're very competent. Okay, the next argued case is number 162267, Prasad against the Office of Personnel Management. Mr. Sterin.
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning, and may it please the Court. My name is John Sterin. I'm here on behalf of the petitioner, Dr. Prasad, and this is an appeal from an adverse ruling of the Merit Systems Protection Board upholding a decision of the Office of Personnel Management denying Dr. Prasad benefits under the Civil Service Retirement System.
What exactly is the harm that Dr. Prasad suffered from the mistaken coding under CSRS?
There is a huge difference between a CSRS annuity and what the government is trying to give Dr. Prasad for retirement.
Are there additional monthly payments? Benefits?
There are significance. One is an annuity with a monthly payment. The second, which is what they're trying to foist on him, is essentially his accumulation of submitted funds to CSRS with an incremental increase over the 25 years that he was employed. So it's essentially an annuity.
Where's that reflected in the record, the difference?
Your Honor, I don't believe it is reflected in the record.
Okay. Dr. Prasad didn't have deductions from 1989 until 2009 for the DC retirement program alongside the CSRS deductions, correct?
That's a correct statement. Okay. During that time period, the only deductions were CSRS deductions. And Your Honors, I believe that the board made three substantial and material errors that I believe require reversal of the board's denial. I think first, the board simply ignored the special coverage rules that an employee like Dr. Prasad was entitled to. And those special coverage rules applied specifically to an employee that was employed by the federal government at St. Elizabeth Hospital before 1987, before the time the hospital transitioned from federal control to control by the District of Columbia.
Was Dr. Prasad covered by FERS before the transition?
I believe he was, and I believe that the board essentially concluded that he was.
Well, how do you respond to the government's argument that he couldn't have been covered by FERS because his appointments were temporary with no retirement coverage prior to October 1, 1987?
Yes, Your Honor. The appointment actually was for an accepted appointment for a term of 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
The government's argument is that that accepted appointment is not covered by CSRS, or someone in that position is not entitled to CSRS. Those same exceptions do not apply to someone who is covered by the federal, by FERS. And that's what we've argued. There is a very limited number of exclusions for employees that are covered by FERS. And we start out with a proposition that every employee is covered by some sort of retirement system unless excluded by law or regulation. And so to directly answer the question, they again are focusing on CSRS. And that, I believe, is what the board did below, which I believe was inappropriate. If we look at whether or not
would a temporary appointment qualify under FERS?
It does. It's not his accepted
appointment.
The government
disagrees with you on that point, I believe.
In the brief, Your Honor, I believe they only talk about whether or not it's covered by CSRS, not FERS. And I believe there's a significant distinction between the exceptions that would apply to give someone benefits under CSRS versus the exceptions under FERS.
Well, you note that the OPM handbook for St. Elizabeth's transition states an employee must have been subject to CSRS on September 30th,
87. The handbook actually says must be subject to CSRS or FERS as of the time of the transition. And that's the exact language of the handbook.
It's not, you don't argue that he was covered, that he had 5 years of federal employment before that October 187.
Before the transition?
Right.
No, Your Honor. Dr. Prasad started his employment with the federal government in 1984. The transition occurred in 87.
How do you argue that he would have been subject to CSRS on September 30th, 87?
Because the way the special coverage rules read, if you are in a position that would have been covered by either CSRS or FERS, and Dr. Prasad's position would have been covered by FERS at the time of transition, he gets to continue that coverage after the transition. And the reason why it converts from FERS to CSRS after the transition is because employees that went from federal employment to employment by the District of Columbia could not keep FERS. It had to stay only as a federal employee. So it transitioned from FERS to CSRS. And that's exactly what the special coverage rules were intended to cover. He is in a unique situation, a very odd situation. I don't think it's quite frequent that there would have been employees in that position. But he was one of those employees, and he was subject to that, and he should be allowed to get the benefit of that. There are two other issues that I believe are worth meriting in terms of the errors that the board committed. The first is the number of creditable services.
The core, I think the core of the government's argument is that because he had non-permanent appointments, he wasn't covered by FERS.
In reading their briefs, I don't believe they talk about FERS at all in their brief in terms of coverage. I believe the only, and the cases they only cite to are all CSRS cases.
I'm looking at page 14 of the red brief. Dr. Prasad merely implies that he was eligible for federal retirement coverage. To be fair, Dr. Prasad is correct that if he was covered by FERS prior to transition, he may have been able to retain CSRS benefits. Dr. Prasad's non-permanent appointments, however, did not entitle him to a federal annuity, and he has offered no support for the proposition that temporary term appointments qualify as covered service. So
Okay, Your Honor, and I didn't quite read it that way, but to be fair, if that's the way they've read it, the CSRS and FERS handbook has an adequate description of what the exclusions are for FERS versus CSRS. And we have cited to our brief the position in the handbook that the exclusion for FERS as opposed to CSRS are much different, that they are not the same exclusions, and they are much more refined. In fact, there appears to be only one real significant exclusion. That's at section 10A1.3-5 of the handbook. Talks about temporary employees serving on appointments other than provisional appointments of 1 year or less.
Talk about 12A4.1-1E.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, can you say that again?
Sure. 12A4.1-1(E), close paren.
is basically the crux of the special coverage rules that talks about, and that's precisely what I think we relied upon, that talks about the fact that if you are an employee like Dr. Prasad, who would have been covered by FERS before the transition.
Would have been.
Yes, Your Honor.
That would have been. But doesn't say he was.
Well, we believe, I go back to the proposition that every employee is covered by retirement benefits unless there is an explicit exclusion by law or regulation.
And 5 U.S.C. 8333, which is the statutory service requirements.
My read of that is that it does not prohibit an employee who is serving as an accepted term for 3 years from being eligible for FERS. It does talk about the exclusions for CSRS, and I believe that's in part what the board's error was, and I believe that's in part what the respondent keeps harping upon, which is that they are looking at exclusions for CSRS, as opposed to exclusions for FERS. And that's where I come back to, that there is not an exclusion that will be applicable to Dr. Prasad.
You're not addressing what bothers me about the government's case, which is their erroneous continuing statements to Dr. Prasad in his payslips.
Well,
I don't know if that does you any good, really, but it sort of knots the stomach when one reads it.
This whole matter has sort of knotted the stomach, Your Honor. We have had trouble since the beginning. We have a sort of a parallel proceeding going on in the District of Columbia addressing those type of statements that are in his payslips. But I don't believe that that was actually part of this proceeding.
It's not.
Okay,
Your Honor,
thank you.
The rest of my time.
Let's hear from the other side, Mr. Stern. Mr. Rodriguez.
Good morning. May it please the Court. I want to start by addressing a question from the Court. The question was directly, was Dr. Prasad covered by FERS? And the answer from Dr. Prasad's counsel was, quote, I believe he was. Now, as we make clear in our brief, Dr. Prasad has only ever implied that he was covered by FERS. He's never actually come out and said he's covered by FERS, or he's never taken this argument a step further and developed it and said, these are the requirements for FERS, and this is what you would have to do to meet it. Because if he did take that next step, it would be clear that he's not subject to FERS. Now, if we look at the handbook and if we look at the regulations, they make clear that to be eligible for FERS, not only do you have to have the 5-year creditable service requirement, you also have to be in a position that's subject to Social Security withholding. And Dr. Prasad certainly was not. In fact,
give us some cites here to regulations and statutes?
Sure.
It seemed to me that you were, if Mr. Dr. Prasad were correct, that the accepted 3-year appointment qualified for CERS, for FERS, then he'd be in business, right?
I don't think that's correct, that he would be in business, because, again, it would only be 3 years, not
Let's assume he had 5 years.
If he had the 5 years, okay. Right. And so, The absence of the 5 years. But that's just one element of FERS coverage.
And the second is not subject to Social Security.
Exactly. And that can be found at 5 CFR section 842.103. It can also be found at the handbook. I mean, just to...
Yeah, cite us to the...
The handbook, I mean, we can go to Chapter 10 of the OPM handbook, and this is something that Dr. Prasad's counsel referred to in his reply brief. He talks about the limited exclusions to FERS coverage versus CSRS coverage. Well, there's an omission from the brief, Dr. Prasad's reply brief, because the very first line, if we look at page 24 of Chapter 10, I apologize.
Where is it in the
Section 10A1.
Appendix site.
I'm sorry?
Is it in the appendix?
Oh, the OPM handbook is not in the appendix.
You don't have that.
No. But I do have the regulation, and I do have the actual page number for Chapter 10. It's page 24, section 10A1.3-5. And again, this page was cited by Dr. Prasad in his reply brief. Now, this page, what it does is it's a quick reference, and it discusses the limited exclusions from FERS coverage, because obviously there are more exclusions for CSRS coverage than for FERS coverage. But in the very first sentence, it says that the employee has to be subject to OASDI taxes, otherwise known as Social Security taxes. So again, Your Honor, to address your question and your point, not only would he have to meet the 5-year creditable service requirement, he would also have to be in a position subject to Social Security withholding.
Was he subject to Social Security withholding?
He was not. In fact, this is actually in the record. Your Honor, if we go to... So if we go to page 64 of the joint appendix.
54?
64, Your
64,
Honor.
Thank
this
you.
Is 64 and 65. So if let's first look at 65.
Okay.
It's hard to see. I apologize. You can see that these are poor quality originals. But in the center of the page 65, we have a box right down toward the middle that says retirement, box 29. And there it says 11 FICA, otherwise known as Social Security.
Yep.
If we look at page 64, this is actually a correction. It's a personnel form that corrects the page 65 record and changes his coverage from 11 FICA to 12 none. This also was referenced on page 59.
What was the occasion of that change?
The occasion of the change, as we understand it, is it was a mistake, another mistake by the D.C. government. And this time around, they had improperly coded him at that time as being subject for Social Security withholding when he was not. If we look at page 59...
What's the date on those two documents?
So the date, and again, these are...
It's date of action.
So the date of action is 1988. But the effective date is 1987.
Right, right, right.
So we can see it looks like this is February 1988. The personnel record from Appendix 65 is November 20th, 1987. So my best guess on this is 3 months after they made this mistake, they corrected it. And if we look at page...
Which is better than 20 years.
I agree, Your Honor. And if we look at page 59, this is a letter to Dr. Prasad from August 2009. If we look at counting down from the top, one, two, three, four paragraphs in, we have a sentence that begins toward the middle of the page. Initially, he was erroneously covered by FICA. However, a correction to the record on February 17th, 1988, changed his coverage from FICA to none. So, again, if we take Dr. Prasad's argument even
on
one step
further.
That's
page 59, you're saying?
59, Your Honor.
I see that, yes.
Initially?
I see it.
So again, if we take these statements, these arguments, one step further than just a blanket statement, yes, I was covered, we look, and no, he doesn't meet either requirement, the five-year service requirement or the withholding for Social Security requirement. So, you know, any way you look at this, any way you slice it, whether you look at CSRS benefits or FERS benefits, Dr. Prasad was just ineligible. And while it's unfortunate what happened to him, that a D.C. government employee made a mistake 28 years ago and improperly coded him, that mistake cannot override the statutory requirements for eligibility to either federal annuity. And so that's our bottom line. And we think at the end of the day, even though there's a lot of talk about exclusions, he's just not eligible. And he wasn't eligible. And that's clear from the record.
Somewhere, I know you can't assert estoppel against the government. I mean, that's a general principle. But somewhere, it seems to me he has something to say about how he planned his life for 28 years and was then faced with being told, nope, sorry, we made a mistake. You use the word unfortunate in your brief. I'd certainly agree with that. But, of course, your argument is the law is the law.
There's my argument. And one of the reasons, Your Honor, why I included the Yancey case from the District of Columbia was just to say...
Yeah, why did you include it?
I included that because, for one thing. One, because it had really great language that I could use in my brief about how the D.C. government cannot bind the federal government to...
But the plaintiff there was hired by St. Elizabeth after...
Very... Well, here's the... With regard to the special coverage rules, unfortunately for Dr. Prasad, because he was just a medical resident in 1987, he didn't have any retirement coverage. When he started working in 1989, it was as if he had never worked for St. Elizabeth's prior to that, because he doesn't get any benefit from the special coverage rules. I included Yancey because it was a psychologist like Dr. Prasad who came on board St. Elizabeth's in 1989 and was promised, it appears, at the time and then subsequently for 20 years through pay stubs, that she would receive CSRS benefits, and she did not. And so that's why I included that. I think, unfortunately, this was a problem that was bigger than just Dr. Prasad's situation. But if we look at the record, and I'm not sure, again, how these problems, what happened, but if we look, we have in Appendix 54, this is a bulletin. And this is from Theodore Thornton Sr., who is the Director of Personnel for the Government of the District of Columbia from October 1st, 1987. If you look at the bottom of page 54 and the top of page 55, right, the D.C. government was very clear about who at St. Elizabeth's could qualify for federal retirement coverage. And, you know, I'll read from the top of 55, beginning with, quote, a federal employee who has no prior employment with the district in a CSRS-covered position is not eligible to retain or obtain CSRS coverage. Those employees would be covered by the district retirement benefit program. So, again, even though there was a mistake in 1989, it was always clear what the federal government intended, and I also believe it was clear what the D.C. government intended. And, unfortunately, there was a mistake that was made. But at the end of the day, it appears that Dr. Prasad was eligible for the D.C. defined contribution plan. And the contributions that he were deducted from his pay were given back to him, and they were applied to Social Security. So at the end of the day, I think this is a really simple issue of just not being...
You say it's applied to Social Security. How does that work?
Well, I don't know how that works. I believe, Your Honor, that CSRS beneficiaries, those who are eligible for CSRS benefits, per statute, do not have any Social Security deductions taken from their pay. And so once it was determined that Dr. Prasad was not eligible for CSRS benefits, they realized that, oops, he should have been paying into Social Security. He was not. So his refund of $67,000, the vast majority went to Social Security, and then the remainder was refunded to him. If there are no further questions, I'll forego the use of the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you,
Rodriguez. Mr. Sharon.
Just very briefly, Your Honors, and just pick up from the last point, it's sort of a contention or an understanding that what's happened is Dr. Prasad is left with no retirement benefits. Everything that he had originally contributed gets sent back to Social Security, so he has no other than Social Security, he apparently has no separate retirement benefits. I understand that Prasad...
Does he not get something from the District of Columbia?
There is no annuity. There is nothing similar to or comparable to the CSRS annuity.
That wasn't my question. Does he not get some... I'll repeat it verbatim. Yeah. Does he not get something from the District of Columbia?
I'm going to answer this way. Other than what he has contributed... No.
What does that mean? I mean, isn't there a retirement program in the D.C. government?
The D.C. government does have a retirement program, but that's not the way he is.
And at the time of the conversion of St. E's from federal to the D.C., the understanding was, well, if you had a federal retirement plan before, you can carry that on, but if you don't, you're going to have to be on D.C.'s retirement plan.
Correct.
And he qualified for that, correct?
Well, that's what the respondent says, that he qualifies for that. But his deductions throughout that entire time period were sent to CSRS and not to the D.C.
I understand that, but can he buy into the D.C. retirement plan?
Well, that's part of our underlying case pending before the District of Columbia, is how he should be treated if he does not get CSRS benefits. I think
Judge Wallach was asking is whether or not the door was closed to the doctor for a retirement plan. And I'm hearing you saying perhaps not entirely closed.
And I'm not entirely sure what the ultimate outcome would be, depending on what happens here and what happens before the D.C. Superior Court, Your Honors. Just one fine point about the FICA issues. As a factual matter, in the record, Dr. Prasad was subject to FICA before he transitioned from as an employee of St. Elizabeth, before it transitioned from federal control to the District of Columbia control. And that's at Appendix 22, 23, and 24. I understand the respondent likes to characterize those as mistakes, but that's, in fact, what the evidence has in the record.
Corrected mistakes.
I'm not sure how that is corrected. The way the respondent likes to see it corrected is that he was given back those FICA contributions as a result of these proceedings. That is part of the true-up. That's part of the true-up that government tried to give him his CSRS deductions plus the FICA contributions all back in a lump sum and say, here, let's go ahead and give it all Social Security, as Social Security. So my response to your question, Your Honor, is that no, I don't believe it is a retroactive correction. I believe that the evidence shows in the record that he was subject to FICA. Those are exhibits at Appendix 22, 23, and 24. That was, in fact, retroactive to March of 1987. Your Honor, if there are no other questions, I'll leave you with that.
What about the five-year requirement that your adversary says your client didn't meet?
Every year is creditable. And he's got, I believe, 25 years of creditable service. I believe it's an incorrect statement to say that he had to have 5 years before the transition. There's no question, as a factual matter, he did not have 5 years. He started in 84. The transition was in 87. But I believe it's an incorrect statement of law to say that he had to have the 5 years of creditable service before the transition. I believe that's a requirement at the end.
Well, the government's argument was that he had to do that in order to get himself qualified as of the date of transition so that he could say, I'm in a federal program.
And I believe that's the argument today. I don't believe that's the argument in the brief. I believe they agreed with us that the board miscalculated the creditable service in the opinion. And I believe it's an incorrect statement to say that he actually had to have all the 5 years before the transition. I do believe he had to have the 5 years before he retired, and he did.
But for purposes of qualifying for first service, he didn't have the 5 years before the transition.
That's a correct factual statement, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Okay. Any more questions? Okay. Thank you. Thank you both. The case is taken under submission.